You hear an awful lot about the damage that farming does to the environment. You hear a lot less about the things that a lot of farmers are doing that protect and even enhance nature, which is a pity because we all respond much better to positive examples than telling off. And there is a scheme which for 6 years now has been shining a light on those farms and farmers who have taken steps to farm in ways that don't do damage. You'll have heard a fair few Farming for Nature ambassadors on Countrywide sharing their approach in the past, but now all of that wisdom has been gathered together in a handbook. A book written by farmers for other farmers. On Glanbui Farm near Knock in Mayo, I talked to dairy farmer Sinead Moran, one of the scheme's ambassadors, about what she had learned and how Farming for Nature had helped her business. That is the sound of bovine bliss. One of Sinead's shorthorn dairy cows with her face firmly planted in the silage cut on Glanbui Farm's 34 acres.
So every field has a name. Some of them are brilliant, some of them are really just lazy. This is the meadow field because it comes up in a beautiful meadow. That field that you can see there is the original Glanbui, what we're named after. And the next field is called the field beside the road. So it's really original.
Walking the land, we get right down into what others might think of as the weeds.
Which is this little plant here, and that's its stem. Ribworth plantain. It is, on the science front, it's a grass herb. It's a natural anti-wormer. It's also really high protein. And in New Zealand, they've tried it where they've planted it back in with monocrops of Italian ryegrass, and they've been able to reduce the ammonia emissions in cow's urine. It is the most amazing little plant. On top of that, you can eat it yourself. We can also make a slab out of it. First kind of sun that comes out in this high summer, I'd always get a little bit of a rash. Take this down, blitz it, rub it on, sort it.
And besides all of that, your cows like it.
Besides all of that, the cows like it. And you see it now when we go back down to the shed, you see it in the silage and it's like this black. It just comes this black, but it's really high protein. Like they reckon that protein can be up on 17-18% in this little grass herb.
And you never added that, did
we
you?
We never added that.
Just,
that
it was here all the time.
Totally natural to grow in fields on the side of roads. It's deemed a weed and it is the most fantastic plant. Like every year I do a post on our social media about 10 things I love about planting because I'm constantly learning new things. Like when you used to be able to collect the seeds and you can ground the seed for a flower.
Really?
God. It is the most amazing plant.
So everything from skin treatments
to natural anti-wormer to high protein for the cows to reduce ammonia in their urine. The other thing is they have a bit of a taproot, so they're reaching down past the grass. Like you can see even where it grows, you'll tend to see tufts of good grass growth around it. So yeah, it's an amazing plant.
And there again is the evidence. Silage that not only goes down a treat, but generates the kind of milk solids that make for a unique product. Each field producing noticeably different cream and butter.
Because it's quite a sandy base, on the steep hill there you get a lot of birdfoot, which is again, fixes nitrogen. You'll get kind of the first leaves of the clovers coming up, dandelions, you know. And I remember a conventional farmer telling me that his grandfather used to call the dandelion the dairyman's gold. So it's ironic that it's deemed a weed.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, like the more greenery, the more diversity the cows eat, depending on which field they're in, totally impacts the cream and then impacts the butter.
I wonder if you did think about using Dairyman's Gold as a brand, would you run into copyright issues there?
I wonder. Can you imagine a sign up beside the sign of how to manage weeds? Yeah, it would be a nice one for sure.
Sinead and her partner MJ are taking two incomes from the kind of farm conventionally called marginal. In other hands, it might only support a part-time suckler operation. When doing something very different to everyone else around you, having the science-based seal of approval from the Farming for Nature network really mattered to Sinead.
You know, being a Farm for Nature ambassador, if you get the plaque, it's like a validation from them, you know, you're working with ecologists who know what they're talking about.
We're not just lunatic hippies.
Going, oh yeah, you're backing this up, you know.
There is science behind this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like sometimes when you want to make a bigger impact and you want to reach other farmers, you know, having that science to back up what you're doing is fantastic. Then the other side of it is bringing all these farms together that are so different, from small scale to large scale to direct selling to selling into co-ops, but yet who have all managed to do something on their farm that is a benefit to nature, but at the same time has actually benefited their farm.
How much are you learning from each other?
Lots. Like, there's so many things that we've learned from a couple of the guys that are in it that would be conventional, that perhaps before might have just rolled my eyes at and not listened to. But when you see the things they're doing, you're thinking, wow, that's great. You know, I can definitely learn from that. And vice versa, where you see a lot of bigger farms looking to smaller farms and kind of going, oh, well, these guys are actually doing it as well. You know, small is not always bad. And we don't always need scale in business or in farming.
And that wouldn't have happened without that network, would it?
I think we'd still remain on the fringes, for sure. I think Farming for Nature definitely brings that sense of validation, but also brings, by bringing us all together and highlighting all the different types of farms, it is a great way to show that anyone, if they choose to do something different on the farm, can do it no matter what scale.
How has it helped in explaining to the public what it is that you're doing? Like, people can look in here now, see a big corner of a field full of brambles and not automatically think, I suppose, that that's lazy farming.
Yes.
Why haven't they cleared that corner out?
Yeah, yeah. I think from a customer perspective, it helps, as in, number one with customers is communication from us, if that makes sense. Like, us, our direct communication with them and explaining things definitely helps. But again, having the plaque on the wall of Farming for Nature Ambassador just gives that extra kind of next step of, well, someone else also said that what they're doing is not just talking crap from their mouth, basically, that they are doing something of benefit. Look, it's a fantastic network. And now with the book coming out, like, the book is just going to take all that knowledge from all those different farms and put it into a really simple format for another farmer to pick up and say, God, I might try that. You know, even their section on what we deem noxious weeds and how do we manage them. So our thistles, our ragworts, things like that, that we don't necessarily have to go in there and spray, but maybe there's a different management system that we can take either through grazing or topping or something else that will reduce the problem, but also kind of leave space for nature, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Sinead Moran there, Glanbwy Farm near Knock, County Mayo. And as we speak, the presses are rolling on that brand new Farming for Nature handbook, which is going to be available from next week. It is a very, very handsome looking product with lots of ideas on how to manage a farm for nature, lots of insights from Farming for Nature ambassadors, lots of science to explain how all of it works, all beautifully illustrated with some very, very familiar names to you. The authors are Emma Hart, Brendan Dunford, and the Farming for Nature project leader, Bridget Barry, who joins me from Cork this morning. Bridget, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Philip.
You've become a very influential voice in farming in a relatively short space of time. Remind me where the idea came from.
Yeah, so when you say you, I mean the network has come so influential. So Farming for Nature was born out of the work that had happened in the Burren for the previous 30 years. I was up there and I was managing the Burren BO Trust, which is an education conservation charity up there. And it's the sister charity to the Burn Life Programme. And I remember the conversation where Brendan and I were sitting down and we were talking about one of our big successes was when you awarded the Burn farmers, you know, the ones who got the best biodiversity that year, their sense of pride and the power that they held to be able to encourage their peers to make changes was phenomenal. And we were just wondering whether we could do this nationally, whether we could change the narrative that farming and nature are apart from each other. And actually, there's so many farmers that are doing good stuff on the ground, and whether they could be pulled out and be used as spokespersons for nature. So we set up the Farming for Nature Ambassador Awards. And in the first year, we put out to different organisations like the National Parks and Wildlife Service and the Department of Ag and various other organisations to put forward the farmer that they thought throughout Ireland that was doing great stuff for nature. And I think in that first year, we got about 30 nominees and we selected six Farming for Nature ambassadors. And we had an awards and it was all great. But we suddenly realised, actually, we needed to get their voice out there more.
And how many do you have now?
So we actually have 104 Farming for Nature ambassadors. So,
and I think the point of them is that they're big and they're small. They're intensive, extensive. Highlands, lowlands, dairy, beef, horticulture, sheep, poultry. There is a sort of a role model there for everyone. But if the idea is for some of Ireland's 137,000 other farmers to copy them, can you quantify how successful you've been yet?
I suppose we could quantify in numbers. You know, I can throw stats at you like, you know, we have 12,000 subscribers to our newsletter. We have 24,000 followers on Instagram, you know, on our different social medias. You know, lots of 4,000 people have come on our farm walks. There's lots of numbers out there that I could throw at you. But actually, the bit that really gets me, Philip, is when people take the effort to write to us and to email us and say, listen, I looked at your video or I listened to that podcast and I've made these small changes on my farm and it has blown my mind how nature has come back. And that's harder to quantify because it's, you know, it's anecdotal, but that's that the fact that people actually regularly take the time to write to us and say that Farming for Nature has changed the way they farm.
Do you know what else comes through the handbook, though, and the testimonies of the individual farmers is that this is not just about farming for nature, it's also about farming for yourself. Taking the foot off the accelerator a little bit can make a very significant impact to a farmer's life.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, I think farmers are so busy and so busy looking at the bottom line that very often they forget to look around at the benefits that nature can hold for them. I mean, I was speaking to a dairy farmer the other day and he was saying he put in the measures for acres. You know, he brought out the fences from the hedgerows, he fenced off around the riparian zones and he planted hedgerows. But what really surprised him, he said, is how much he actually enjoyed his farm more, how much he now took the time to stop at those hedgerows, see what was coming out, see what birds were going into the hedgerows. And he said for him, it gave him a sense of calm in the chaotic world that he felt he was dealing with in terms of dairy farming.
Who is the book written for? Who do you hope will read it?
I suppose it's for anyone interested in farming or growing. I mean, it's for the big farmer who's trying to look at how they can be more resilient to climate changes. It's for someone who's looking to grow more nutrient-dense food, or it's even for the gardener who wants to plant more, you know, pollinator-friendly flowers in their garden. I suppose the idea is that it would stimulate people to take action, you know, to start somewhere small. And these small measures can make a massive difference for nature. So it doesn't have to be complicated, but that everyone can do something small or big for nature on the land that they own.
Okay. You're doing advanced sales, farmingfornature.ie?
Yes, absolutely. So we have pre-orders. Anyone can order from now. Like you say, it's hot off. It's coming off the press in a couple of weeks'
time.
Might
still be a little bit inky now, yeah.
Yeah. But so it's available to buy now, and you can buy in bulk, or you can, you know, if you're a farm advisor or you're a bookshop, yeah, or if you're just someone.
That's very optimistic. Yeah. You can buy in bulk for everybody in your life.
Do give it to all your neighbouring farmers and continue with the movements. Join us in the movement. But it's, I think the reason behind the book, Philip, is that, you know, there's a lot of digital overload out there. There's a lot of information out there. But nothing beats a physical book, something in your hand that you can have in your Jeep, in your tractor, up on the shelf, you know. And I think the important thing about this book is it's written, there's 50 anecdotes from farmers, but it's also backed up by science. Dr. Emma Hart helped us doing phenomenal work, making sure that everything that was put in the book was backed up by science. The bibliography is over 500 papers, so fair dues to her for going through all of them. Yeah. But what's really nice is that each habitat, so whether it's soil, grasslands, woodlands, whatever it is, five simple tips. You can look at the five simple tips, and then under each tip, there's actions you can take. So you can take further action. So whether even you just want to dip into it over a cup of coffee in the morning, or whether you want to kind of, you know, really explore it in great detail when you have time, I feel it's going to be the reference book on your shelf for a long, long time.
Bridget Barry, thank you very much for joining us with that this morning. Now, just before I leave this, one of the familiar contributors in the Farming for Nature handbook is Jane Clark. Jane is the poet who grew up on a farm in Roscommon. Farming and nature are woven right the way throughout her work, as with this poem, which features in the book. This is The Caddisfly.
At the edge of a winter field, a farmer steps into the stream that chitters and chatters downhill, from Devil's Bit western slopes. He scoops up a handful of water and praises the mystery of microbes. He turns over rocks as if panning for gold, whoops when he finds a caddisfly's tubular home. Green, brown, yellow and red, grains of sand and tiny pebbles bound together with a silken thread.
Poetry, science, nature, farming, ambassadors, where else would you get it? The Farming for Nature handbook available in the next couple of weeks, farmingfornature.ie for more information on that.